Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. I'm Molly.
And I am Kim.
And we're just excited to be here with you today and every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. drive time. We hope you enjoy tuning in while you're sitting out there in traffic trying to get home. And we'd love to hear from you. We're going to be talking today a lot about the Supreme Court justices' decisions mm-hmm. recently and how that affects your life. So if you feel like giving us a call and chime in, do so. Our number is 303-632-4160.
Now, here comes the judge.
Yeah. So a couple cool things. Obviously, you know, Kim and I, we do what we do because we are searching for truth continually. Neither of us is that into politics, but as soon as we figured out that every decision a politician makes mm-hmm. has an effect on our lives, we said, oh my gosh, we've got to search, you know, figure out what are they doing and find out how is it going to affect us and let our friends and neighbors know. So we're really searching for truth in that. And then also, you know, the media, gosh, the media spreads so much faux info that, you know, you got to mm-hmm. search for the truth beyond that.
We're looking for true news. True news, right?
Yes, true uh-huh. news. So speaking of true news, I just wanted to say, did you hear about CNN? They just got busted.
I did see that. Yes,
yeah,
I did.
Yeah. So for anybody else out there that hadn't heard yet today, I thought this was pretty cool. You know, President Trump keeps calling CNN faux news. And people are like, why are you doing that? And oh my gosh, Project Veritas, check them out.com. James O'Keefe and his team, they do such an amazing job sending people undercover, investigating and finding out and shining the light on just the filth that's going on, not only, you know, in D.C., but also in the media.
The people that have things to hide don't like them very much.
Oh, yes.
Not at all.
So I love them. So just recently, it looks like one of the Project Veritas's guys went undercover.
Let's get them back on.
So they went undercover in CNN, and one of the senior producers admitted that the CNN president, Jeff Zucker, ordered his team to keep pushing that fake story of the President Trump and Russian collusion alive, even though there's no evidence of truth in the story, but it's got great ratings. They're getting all kinds of great ratings because of that faux story they're pushing, so to just keep on doing that.
Boy, Molly, I tell you, that's really... the founders are probably turning over in their graves because freedom of the press means that we do search for truth. Now, people can mess up. I mean, certainly that can happen. Sometimes you can try to get the facts right. It can be incorrect. But this is an actual conscious decision to try to fool the public. And you know what's going to happen is it's like the little boy that cried wolf. Finally, people will say, CNN, I don't believe a word they're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really happening. I had something interesting happen the other night. A little neighbor of mine up the street, we have birthdays right about the same time. And so we went out for dinner. And she just loves what Donald Trump is doing. And she was talking about one of the Denver stations. And she said, I think I'm going to write that guy a letter at 10 o'clock because all he does is just talk about, you know, all this bad stuff. And she said, I don't think it's true. And so I think that the mainstream media is missing something here. I don't think that they have their pulse on regular, everyday people. And they're getting pretty frustrated with this whole thing.
Yeah, and we don't want just, you know, the news that you want to throw at us. We want to know what's most important to our lives. And that's the only reason we need to turn on the news. Tell me what matters to me.
That's why we do this show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so some big decisions have been made recently with the Supreme Court justices on Monday, yesterday. And so we're really glad to bring Rob Nadelson on board to help break down into elementary terms, I'd say, or, you know, for the rest of us that aren't constitutional scholars, to explain, you know, what the different cases mean. And what specifically we're going to start with is what it means for Colorado's. What implications for Coloradans? Okay. So the reason Rob Nadelson's our guy, we've had him on here with us before, you know him, he's here at the Independence Institute, but he's really known as a constitutional scholar. His research into history and the original meaning of the Constitution has been numerously cited by the U.S. Supreme Court justices, I believe about 17 times since 2013. So when the Supreme Court justices want to know what did the original Constitution mean, they go to this guy. So, Rob, welcome to the AmeriChicks. Thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be back with the two of you.
Awesome. We've got a couple minutes, and then we'll go to break, and then we'll get back and get really into the meat of it. But if you don't mind, let's get started on Colorado implications.
Okay. There are several Colorado implications in recent decisions of the Supreme Court. One is, as you know, involves the Douglas County voucher program. That particular program was challenged as violating a part of the state constitution, which is commonly called the Blaine Amendment or Blaine provision. It was upheld by the Colorado Court of Appeals, but struck down by the Colorado Supreme Court. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court just issued a case dealing with a similar provision, called the Trinity Lutheran case, which I hope we talk about. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the court did today is they vacated, that is to say, they got rid of the Colorado Supreme Court's decision and told the Colorado Supreme Court to reconsider its decision in the light of this Trinity Lutheran case. So it in effect, what the court is saying is there's a possibility that the Douglas County voucher plan could be constitutional after all.
So what happens then? It goes back to Colorado, and when is it going to be heard? And you know, so
and do they have to go
now?
Through all that again?
Well, the Colorado Supreme Court will probably not go through a lot of additional procedure. They could, I suppose, ask for more argument, but it's not like it has to go back to the trial court and then the case has to be considered all over. What the court is going to have to do is it's going to have to focus on its earlier decision, the wording of the Colorado Constitution, and then to determine whether the wording of the Constitution of the Colorado Constitution is consistent with the latest U.S. Supreme Court decision.
Great. Okay, great. Well, Rob Nadelson, stick with us. We'll be right back.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment, and closing fees are limited. Active duty or retired military, reserves, and surviving spouses may qualify. Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook have spent decades finding the correct loan to suit your unique financial situation. Give Home Mortgage Alliance a call at 303-888-2732. That's 303-888-2732. Or check them out on our AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com.
Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516, or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChick sent you.
Today, you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Eggs, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We have on the line with us Rob Nadelson. He is a speaker. He's an author. He's a constitutional specialist. He's with the Independence Institute. He's written a great book, The Original Constitution. Rob, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. There's a lot going on at the Supreme Court. When we went to break, we were talking about this Douglas County Scholarship Program. Molly and I, during break, she said, now, exactly why did the Colorado Supreme Court rule against the Douglas County voucher case and then causing it to go up to the Supreme Court? So what happened there exactly?
It has to do with the Colorado Constitution. The Colorado Constitution was adopted in 1876, as you know, we're the centennial state. And one of the provisions it has is a provision which says that government money cannot be used for sectarian purposes. Now, a similar provision exists in the Missouri Constitution that the U.S. Supreme Court just partially invalidated, and it exists in the constitutions of over 30 other states. The history of it is that when these provisions were adopted in the late 19th century, there was a strong movement to try to deny any kind of aid to Catholic schools. There was a strong anti-Catholic feeling in the country. And so these provisions, which are called Blaine provisions or Blaine amendments, were efforts to prevent funding for, quote, sectarian, meaning Catholic schools. Well, over the years, the term sectarian has often been misunderstood, and people have reached the conclusion that what that means is you cannot permit any funding of religious schools. So because the voucher program in Douglas County included religious schools, and because the Colorado Supreme Court misinterpreted sectarian to mean religious, they held that the program was unconstitutional.
Now, Rob Nadelson, Kim here. Just a quick question, though. Government has been using this definition for a long time regarding a variety of different government programs and religious institutions, correct?
You mean the definition of sectarian?
Well, they've been using kind of the separation of church and state. I think they've said initially the wording in Blaine was sectarian, then it goes to religion, and then they go over right to separation of church and state, right?
Right. Well, the Blaine Amendment itself is directed at sectarian activity, and that was at the time a code word for Catholic, although it might also be used as a code word for Mormon, who were also widely disliked at the time. It was not a word for religious because at that time the public schools were religious. They were mainline Protestant.
Okay.
Now, obviously, this is the background of this comes out of bigotry, and if the state took the position today that this is only targeted at Catholic schools, the amendment would be instantly struck down as a violation of the First Amendment. But based on what the Supreme Court had to say yesterday, it looks like the Blaine Amendment, the Blaine provision in Missouri and in Colorado also, is at least partially unconstitutional.
Wow.
And that's why the Supreme Court said that the Colorado Supreme Court better take another look at this case.
Wow. Okay. So that's coming back on down. And the decision yesterday, we talked a little bit about it, but let's segue over to that. I think you wanted to talk about the Trinity Lutheran case, right?
Yeah, Trinity Lutheran was a daycare center. It was run by a church, and they applied for a program that the state of Missouri ran. The program would have allowed them to get a grant so that they could buy playground material, in particular recycled tires were broken up and used as matting for playgrounds so kids wouldn't scrape themselves on gravel or asphalt. And they were disqualified from applying for this program because they were a church. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, you can't deny an organization basic government services or access to government programs simply because they're a church. You can't do that. Now, it's not entirely sure that would mean that that the Supreme Court would say you also have to permit vouchers as well. That we'll find out perhaps next year. But the court has not gone that far, and there's some indication in the Trinity Lutheran decision that they might not go that far. So ultimately, the anti-voucher opinion of the Colorado Supreme Court might stand. We just don't know yet.
Okay. And Rob Nadelson, sorry, I wanted to ask you about the language, though, in the Trinity Lutheran Church. It sounded like you said there may only be a partial override of state blame provisions,
yeah.
And also that it looks like Gorsuch and Thomas both said that they were skeptical of the distinction between basis of religious status and religious use. And I'm curious if you could explain what that means to me.
Yeah, this gets pretty deep in the weeds. The court made it clear, especially through one of their footnotes called footnote 3, that what they were saying was the church cannot be denied access to a program because it's a church. They weren't saying that the state would be required to fund religious activity. And that's really important because, of course, religious schools tend to include religious training as part of their curriculum. And so that gives the majority, and there were seven justices in the majority, that gives the majority an out to say, well, look, it's okay for a church or a church-related school to apply for asphalt for a playground. It's not okay for them to apply for a government grant which could be used to teach religion.
But
Thomas said that's a false distinction. You say you can't really make a distinction based on that, but they were the only two justices that said that.
But, Rob, there is a difference between a parent receiving a voucher and then looking at the options and deciding where they're going to send their child so the parent is making that decision versus government giving a grant to a religious school. There is a difference there, right?
Well, I agree. You know, technically, we're a little in the weeds here, but technically the Douglas County Voucher Program is not a voucher program. A voucher program is one where the money goes directly from the government to the school at the parent's option, but still goes directly to the school. The Douglas County program is structured a little bit differently. The money actually goes to the parent. But I agree with you. There's a difference if the parent makes the free decision. The point, however, is that the U.S. Supreme Court earlier, in a case called Davy versus Locke or Locke versus Davy, said it's okay for a state to create a little distance between itself and churches. So it would be okay maybe under the U.S. Constitution, for the state to fund a voucher program, they would say, but it's also okay for Colorado to say, we don't want to fund a voucher program. So we don't know which way the court's going to go on that.
Interesting. Now, I took a look. I mean, this is actually new ground for me, Rob. I've never really tried to look at a Supreme Court opinion. This is all new ground for me. But I did pull it up, and I think this Trinity Lutheran decision, it was like 53 pages. And so I tried to find the dissenting language there. And I think it was Sotomayor who had written the dissenting opinion. And then is it Ginsburg who was the other no vote? Otherwise, it was a 7-2 vote, right?
Yes, that's right.
You know, Rob, and as I read the very last sentence of the dissenting opinion, my personal opinion is Sotomayor, I don't think she totally understands exactly what the First Amendment says. She seems to have part of the letter that Jefferson sent to the Danbury Baptist years after the First Amendment. And I was a little shocked that a Supreme Court justice didn't just so totally hold to the First Amendment. Did you see anything like that?
You know, Kim, if you read some more U.S. Supreme Court decisions, you will be shocked again and again.
Oh, it's not the first time, huh?
No.
Probably not the last.
the position that Sotomayor and Ginsburg represent is sometimes called a strict separationist position. And the position is that in order to protect both the church and the state, or to protect religion and the state, the state really needs to bend over backwards to avoid any involvement. That's the wall of separation language. Now, I don't personally believe that's an accurate interpretation of the First Amendment, but the U.S. Supreme Court essentially adopted that in 1947, and they've been backing away from it ever since. And there is there is respectable authority, and there are many respectable people, including religious people, who agree with that position. They are very, very concerned about the risk of the state polluting religion. I mean, they're not so much concerned about religion polluting government, but they're very worried about government polluting religion, and so they want that wall of separation. And I think that's where Justice Sotomayor is coming from.
Okay. Well, Rob Needleson, wanted to ask you this question, and this is a question, Molly knows what it is, that I asked Justice Scalia when he was out here in Denver several years ago. And that is that when you look at the First Amendment, it talks about that Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And if you take the definition of religion to be a belief system instead of, a house of worship, it doesn't say house of worship, it says religion. And if we say it's a belief system, is this not saying that government is not to establish or promote a religion? So going to atheism, we could say that atheism is a belief system, is a religion, which believes in nothing. So if government is secular and promotes nothing, could that be unconstitutional?
Well, it's a good question. In 2005, I wrote an article which appeared in the William and Mary Bill of Rights Journal. It comes out of William and
Mary. You are so smart, man.
And you can get it, by the way, going to robnadelson.com and looking at the articles tab.
I'll do it.
And it's called the article is called The Original Meaning of the Establishment Clause. The quick answer to your question is, by the founder's definition, atheism was not a religion. What the Establishment Clause meant is that the state must treat all religions equally, but it's not obligated to treat atheism or non-religion on the same basis. So the government can disfavor religion if it wants to, or it could favor religion. But what it can't do is favor Islam over Christianity or Christianity over Judaism and so forth. It has to treat bona fide religions equally.
Interesting. Okay.
And by the way, that is not the position, as I mentioned a minute ago, that the U.S. Supreme Court adopted back in 1947, but it is the position that they've been moving toward regularly, which I think is an accurate description of what the First Amendment actually means.
Okay. You know, Rob, I want to interject here. If anybody wants to get on our email list, each Monday, we typically send out a breakdown of what the show's going to be throughout the week. And so you're on there, and then we link to your website. So it's very easy. People can go directly to your website. Just click right there. So it's robnadelson.com. Is that right, if I remember right?
That's right.
Yeah, and so all that information is there. But if you want to get on our list, we'll get you on there. Just let us know.
Yeah, check out theamerichicks.com. Okay, so we're talking about implications to people in Colorado of the recent Supreme Court justices' decisions. And we're talking with Rob Needleson, who is a constitutional scholar. So stick with us when we come back. More for you who live here in Colorado, and then we'll get into the First Amendment.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, June 16th through the 22nd, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include Captain Underpants, Wonder Woman, and Alien Covenant. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Please be sure to visit the delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Stay up to date on movie showings and times at 88drivein.net. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, this is the Americhicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT. Thanks for tuning in every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. right here. Every decision the government makes has a big effect on your life and on our lives. That's why we got to pay attention. So we've got on the line with us right now Rob Needleson. He is a constitutional scholar and an author. And, you know, when the Supreme Court justices look to him for the original meaning of the Constitution before they decide on a case, we figured he's good enough to go ahead and explain that to us, too. So welcome back, Rob.
It's good to be back. I should say they occasionally look to me.
The good ones do.
I would, of course, argue not enough.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Not a red phone to you, is what you're
right.
Saying.
Ooh, that'd be a good gift, like the little red button, like they have on the
call Rob Needleson.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Rob, real quick, one more question on this. We were talking about the Trinity Lutheran case and what that means for us here. Obviously, that is going to, we're going to go back to court and try to figure out this DUGCO voucher system again and see if it's okay to start giving money equally to kids and to families that want to be able to choose the school of their choice for their kids. But also just a quick question about the Blaine Amendment. So you said that it's a partial override, but not a complete override of the state Blaine provisions. And I know that here in Colorado, our friend Helen Riley is doing what she can to try to educate people on the Blaine Amendments and try to get those overturned. And so do you think that we're still going to need to go back to the legislature to do that? Or will this Supreme Court case have an effect on that?
You know, it's a partial override in that it eliminates the restriction on religious organizations applying for aid for secular activities like a school playground. It is not an override, at least not yet, for religious activities like religious education. And to tell you the truth, I wouldn't be terribly optimistic about a majority completely overruling the Blaine Amendment. And I say that for two reasons. One is only two justices objected to this footnote 3 that I mentioned earlier, which says that we're invalidating the Blaine Amendment only as to secular activity, not to religious activity. Only two justices objected to that. Secondly, I think that Justice Roberts, and this is very, very common of justices appointed by Republican presidents, I think Justice Roberts has been moving to the left. And you see this in another case, which also came down recently. Justice Roberts, when the homosexual marriage case came down, he was in the dissent. He argued passionately against the position that the states had to recognize same-sex marriage. Well, in a case that just came down, he joined the majority in forcing the state of Arkansas to change its birth certificate procedure to reflect same-sex marriage. So I look at that and I say, you know, in order to overturn the Blaine Amendment, you got to get to 5. And thus far, I can count to 2, mm-hmm. but I haven't yet been able to count to 5. And so I wouldn't be terribly optimistic, which means that if you want to repeal the Blaine Amendment, what you would have to do is you would have to pass a constitutional amendment in Colorado to change the Colorado Constitution.
Okay. And we may actually be getting to another conservative potentially on the Supreme Court justice if Kennedy retires.
Yeah, I don't like that term conservative. What I think you mean.
Originalist.
An originalist, yeah.
Yes.
Someone who enforces the Constitution according to its meaning,
yep.
whether the result happens to be liberal or conservative.
Exactly. Not for political reasons based
right.
on the original Constitution.
Yep. I think it's fair to call the four most liberal justices, like Kagan and Ginsburg and so on, I think it's fair to call them liberal because they tend, in my view, to manipulate constitutional doctrine to reach liberal results.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, the originalists on the court, like, for example, Justice Thomas, who was the one with the longest record, you know, he reaches conclusions irrespective of political outcome. He tries to apply the Constitution as it really is, which is, by the way, how judges normally judge cases.
Yep. And
it's not that unusual.
Okay. So, Rob Nadelson, let's talk more about the implications in Colorado, given Supreme Court justices. How about the Masterpiece Bakery?
Well, the court has granted certiorari in the Masterpiece Bakery case. Certiorari, or since I'm a Latin purist, I'll tell you it's actually pronounced certiorari.
Thank you.
Which means
I'll remember that.
To be made more certain. To be made more certain. It comes from an old writ, an old type of order, whereby a court orders a lower court to set up the record so it can be made more certain as a result. What that means as a practical matter is that the U.S. Supreme Court has said to the lower courts, we want to review this holding, which forces a Christian, conservative Christian baker to make wedding cakes for same-sex couples, or else go out of business. That's the position that that Jack Phillips, who owns the Masterpiece Bakery down on Wadsworth and Hamden, that's the position he's in. He's got to give up the making of wedding cakes, which was essentially a specialty for him, or he's got to make it for ceremonies that he views as a travesty of his religion. And the court said that they will review that. I'm a little bit, I side with Jack Phillips on this case, and I tend to be more optimistic that he'll win than that the Blaine amendments will be thrown out.
So, Rob, why do you side with Jack Phillips on this case?
Well, you know, sometimes a little bit of something is a good thing, but when you get too much of it, it's not a good thing. It was a good thing when we passed civil rights laws to protect, for example, racial minorities who had been subject to segregation and other disadvantages. But what we've done over the years is we've added category after category after category mm-hmm. after category to these civil rights laws. And each one that we add reduces the individual freedom that business owners and people generally have in their lives. And this is a good example. You've got a case of the government saying to somebody, you must use your artistic ability to promote something that you believe to be against God's law. I mean,
and if you don't agree to that, government will come in and they will close you down and they will take your business. Now that's
and send all your people to diversity sensitive training or whatever. I mean, that is, if that's not, I mean, look, I'm Jewish, okay? That would be like the government saying to me, in the interest of supporting the pork producers of the United States, Nadelson, you're going to be forced to eat pork once a week. I mean, that's the kind of intrusiveness that Jack Phillips is going through right now.
Well, and there's a free market answer.
It's outrageous. Yeah, it's outrageous.
There's a free market answer, and I feel that, you know, initially those laws, you know, I'm getting to the point, Rob, where I think a lot of laws should be sunset. Instead of adding things on top and on top, they should be sunset. There was a period there with the civil rights laws. I get it. But it was in many ways a response to the Jim Crow laws, which were unconstitutional laws that were put in place by municipalities and counties. So, you know, it seems
like, I mean, we needed laws to break up racial segregation precisely because government had imposed racial segregation and unequal treatment for so many years. It doesn't therefore follow that every pressure group that sees itself aggrieved should get special protection from the civil rights laws. And this is, again, a great example. I mean, do you force a Jew to eat pork? If the answer to that question is no, we don't want the government forcing a Jew to eat pork, then the answer to the question, do we force a conservative Christian to use his artistic talents to promote a same-sex marriage, that answer is also no.
Well, and it could get really interesting if we forced Muslims to eat pork. that could get real interesting.
Same thing.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm jesting just a little bit on that whole thing. And what we're talking about is government force. That government is forcing somebody, and if you don't do it, we're going to take your business. So it's exciting that the Supreme Court is going to hear this case.
Yeah, generally the Supreme Court has been pretty good on religious liberties cases, and I said that's why one reason I'm optimistic in the Masterpiece Cake case.
Okay, wow. Okay, what do you want to talk about next, Rob? We've got a couple of minutes before we go to break.
We need to talk, of course, about the travel ban cases.
Oh, yeah, don't we?
Yes. What's interesting about these cases, Molly and Kim, is that the same people who have no concern about the religious practice of school children and protecting that are zealous for protecting the religious practice of foreigners who have no connection to the United States but might want to come here. It's really quite interesting, isn't it? And that is the basis on which President Trump's travel orders had been struck down by the lower courts, that is to say, that supposedly they represented religious discrimination.
Okay, well, Rob Nadelson, let's hold through the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court and the travel ban.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Freedom begins in your house, not the White House. We Americans enjoy the privileges of a free society, and each of us has a duty and responsibility to keep America's unique ideals of freedom on course. How? Lens of Liberty can help. Lens of Liberty's Free Freedom Kit provides a complete guide to help you be informed, stay vigilant, and fight back for liberty. Order your Free Freedom Kit from lensofliberty.org now. That's lensofliberty.org, so you are armed with the tools necessary to stand for America's ideals.
Hey, this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and the Supreme Court Justice has been doing a lot of talking this week, and so we've got Rob Nadelson on the phone with us. He is a nationally known constitutional scholar, and he's kind of explaining what the different cases really are going to mean for all of us. Rob, interesting, before we went to break, you said, you know, the same people who showed no concern for the religious rights of American citizens, like Masterpiece Bakery, and want to force people to do something even if it's against their religion, are very concerned about non-citizens' religious rights in America. Take, for instance, the travel ban. They were saying that, that President Trump's travel ban on people traveling here from six broken states that don't have the ability to give us proper information on the people coming here so that we can vet them properly, saying that that's against their religious liberty. So tell us more about this travel ban.
Yeah, it really is. It really is something. Imagine a little thought experiment here. Let's say that while campaigning for re-election in 1940, President Franklin Roosevelt had criticized Shintoism, the religion of Japan. Okay? After the attack on Pearl Harbor the following year, President Roosevelt was going to go before Congress to ask Congress to declare war on Japan, and a group of academics sue him, claiming that because of statements he had made in the 1940 campaign against 1940 campaign, because of those statements criticizing Shintoism, he had no right to recommend a declaration of war. Or let's take another example. John F. Kennedy.
Wow.
John F. Kennedy, a Catholic, okay?
Okay.
Let's say John F. Kennedy says, I don't agree with atheism. I think atheism is wrong, okay? The Cuban Missile Crisis occurs, and John F. Kennedy takes a strong stand against the Soviet Union. A group of academics sue him, saying that because he's previously criticized atheism and been critical of atheists, his standing up against Cuba and against the Soviet Union is just an anti-atheist expression of bigotry, and he has no right to do that. That essentially captures the absurdity of the lawsuit against President Trump's orders. And the only reason I can figure, I mean, I've been in the legal business a long time. I don't want to tell you how many years, but it's more than 40. And when I look at the lower court decisions, I say the only explanation for these decisions, knowing what I know about law, knowing what I know about the precedents, the only explanation I can see for these decisions is animosity against President Trump. And I think basically the Supreme Court agreed with that. What's striking about this decision is, number one, it is substantially a victory for President Trump because the kinds of exceptions that the majority put in its decision are very similar to the exceptions in the executive order itself. And the majority that issued this included all the liberals on the court.
Mm-hmm. Right, it was unanimous.
Yes. In fact, the three justices concurred, and they were the most traditional judges, Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas, and they would have just upheld the ban in its entirety without exceptions. But to anyone who really knows the law, the decision comes as no surprise at all, because of the state of the precedents and because of the deference that courts traditionally give to presidents and the federal government generally in the conduct of foreign policy.
Well, now, just a question. This is a hypothetical, but why do you think that there are these groups out there that are opposing this travel pause and this thorough vetting? I mean, I just can't quite understand it.
Right. And they kind of have an odd alliance, don't they?
Yes.
Because they purport to believe in things like civil liberties and homosexual rights and so forth, and they side with these awful regimes that deny all of that. There's a large group in our society that is hostile, especially in the among opinion makers, that are hostile to Western civilization. They're hostile to our traditions. And so they'll team up with anybody that seems to be taking a stand against those traditions. They're hostile to the Judeo-Christian religious tradition. They're hostile to limited government. They're hostile to private property. They're hostile to the notions of individuals and private groups doing handling most of the problems in society. They basically favor a very different approach to society. And back in the Cold War, they more often than not sided with the Soviet Union, sided with the communist governments, either overtly or de facto. It's a problem, and we've had to deal with it for as long as I've been alive.
Well, Rob Nadelson, what about, wouldn't it be cool if we could require somebody, if they're going to be a Supreme Court justice, to actually have to understand the original meaning of the Constitution, and that the purpose is to actually protect American citizens, not anybody else around the world?
Well, yes. I mean, when the president nominates someone, the president needs to vet that person very carefully to make sure that he or she understands basic constitutional principles. One of the problems that Republican presidents have faced in the past is that they often haven't done that.
Yeah.
And so some of the court's biggest liberals were actually nominated by Republican presidents who did not adequately vet them. In recent years, Republican presidents have been more cautious. And so while you see some people who have turned, as Justice Kennedy has to a considerable extent, generally they've gotten they've chosen better than in years past.
What about the lower circuit courts? Are they there for life, or is there a way to get rid of those guys, like Ninth Circuit, let's say? You know, you look at the way that they are judging, and it's not based on the original Constitution.
All justices are appointed during good behavior. That essentially means for life, unless they do something that's an impeachable offense. Now, there are proposals out there to impose term limits on judges or justices. Some people, for example, would like to see Supreme Court justices only serve, you know, one 20-year term.
40 years.
Well, you need a fairly long term to secure independence, but only that one term. But to do that, you need a constitutional amendment, and that probably means we'll need an Article 5 convention. There is a movement out there called the Convention of States movement that wants a constitutional amendment to term limit federal officials in that way. But that's a subject for a different day.
Totally is. Hey, Rob Nadelson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it. Rob's going to be back on with us again next week, so that'll be exciting. So thank you so much for your updates on the Supreme Court justices and their decisions and what that means for us. And everybody, go check out robnadelson.com for his writings. He's got some really great stuff. So thanks, Rob. We appreciate
Thank you. And thanks for inviting me.
Okay.
Well, great. And we're almost to the end of the show, but we have one of our great Growing Our Brand partners on the line with us. Mark Cook and Kim Sturtz are with Home Mortgage Alliance. And Mark, how are you doing this afternoon? Thanks for calling in.
You bet. Doing just fine.
Well, great. Now, you guys are mortgage specialists. We've had you on before, and you've talked about there's a variety of mortgages and programs that are available for veterans, but you don't work just with veterans. You work across the spectrum. And today you wanted to bring forward something. We wanted to talk about adjustable rate mortgages. It's kind of been a long time since I've heard about those. So what's going on with those?
Well, what we're seeing is there seems to be a more interest in at least people asking questions about these products. And as you know, back in the mortgage meltdown period, those ARMs really created quite a bit of chaos with borrowers. But now with the interest rates starting to move up, there's been people interested in maybe getting into an adjustable rate mortgage that offers them a lower rate. Now, with that said, there are certain criteria that the borrower has to be aware of, one of which is they need to have an exit plan, because as you know, ARMs will adjust over a period of time. So the example might be a borrower that relocates quite often, and they're only going to be in their new home for, let's say, 6 years. They might be a perfect candidate for an adjustable rate mortgage since they plan on selling the home down the road.
Okay. Well, now, how does an adjustable rate mortgage work exactly?
Well, you start off as what we could consider an introductory rate, which is lower than the current fixed rate market. They stay in that rate for a period of time, typically 5 or 7 years, after which that adjustment period begins. So that adjustment period is based on something like the LIBOR rate plus what they call a margin. So it's going to increase typically more than what you started with. Interesting enough, though, ARMs that people had gotten maybe 5 years ago hadn't really adjusted because inflation's been really low and those indexes like the LIBOR have been remained low. But in the future, that is not going to be the case.
Okay. So why do you think somebody, well, I guess you explain that if they're, explain it again. Why would somebody want an ARM versus a fixed rate?
And we're talking with Mark Cook with the Home Mortgage Alliance.
If they're going to stay in their home for a short period of time, they can take advantage of a lower rate the ARM brings without worrying about the adjustment.
Okay. Okay.
So that's why I say extra criteria. People really need to talk to a seasoned loan officer that can explain the good and the bad that come with an adjustable rate product.
Yeah. But rates are pretty low right now, aren't they?
They are. They are. And we have not seen them come up. However, it's anticipated towards the end of the year, they're going to start making a move up.
Okay.
So if you're going to go buy now.
If you're going to buy now, it's a great time to buy. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a great market in Denver.
Well, and Mark, you and your business partner, we're talking with Mark Cook, you and your business partner, Kim Sturtz, have been in this business for a long time. And I found over the years, Molly, it is so good to work with professionals. And so you guys have a lot of experience. How can people reach you, Mark?
Well, they can call me at my number, which is 303-517-7173. And Kim's number is 303-888-2732. We're available most times to answer any questions people may have.
Okay. And, of course, you can always find out more information about Mark Cook's his link to his website and all that on our website, theamerichicks.com, because we've got their banner ad right there on the front page.
Just go in there and you
Home
can just
Mortgage Alliance.
Click on it and it'll take it right to the information there. So, Mark, thank you so much. We really love working with you guys as our Growing Our Brand partners, and we can certainly endorse you guys. You guys are just awesome. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and thanks for having me on.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, Molly, a great show today. This is great information regarding the Supremes.
It really is regarding the Supreme Court. And we're going to have more information about that next week because, you know, we talked today about the travel ban, about the Trinity Lutheran Church, and also about Masterpiece Bake Shop. But we still have not gotten into the Mattel versus Tam, the trademark slants case with Rob Nadelson.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that's got a really big, it's a really big one for First Amendment rights for people. And so we're going to talk to him about that as well. And then also there's another one on property rights. And so I'm so happy, Kim, to see that we finally do have a majority in the Supreme Court that actually believes that the Constitution is to protect all of our rights, not just certain groups.
And originalists, so that's great. Jefferson said something interesting, Thomas Jefferson. He said, the opinion which gives judges the right to decide which laws are constitutional and what not only for themselves in their own sphere of action, but for the legislature and the executive, also in their spheres, would make the judiciary a despotic branch. Wow. I think that TJ really wanted to kind of make sure that they always went to the original Constitution.
Yes, he did. There was a reason they wrote it the way they did, and it's good to know why and to know how to read that Constitution. So keep doing it. This is the AmeriChicks. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 5 p.m.